Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and this is episode number 452. Today, I'm excited to share with you a conversation I had with Jokotefa Alaye. And Jokotefa is a funeral director and also an end-of-life doula with a focus on grief. And we had a great conversation about the importance of funeral planning and after-death care and how it helps us with empowered grieving. I think you'll really enjoy our conversation. And I'll get to that very quickly. I really don't have any announcements today, except to let you know that I just celebrated a birthday, so I'm honoring the fact that I'm beginning a brand new journey around the sun for another year, and feeling great about that. And I want to also thank all of my supporters on Patreon at patreon.com/EOLU. There are no new supporters this week, but I'll just remind you that everyone who joins that community on Patreon receives some sort of merchandise for becoming a member, and also a monthly end-of-life news update, as well as a recording on what to watch once a month. I share ideas and content related to death, dying, and the afterlife that you can find on television and streaming networks, and then from time to time some bonus episodes for my community members at patreon.com/EOLU. So check it out if you would like to be on our team. And we'll move right on now with my interview with Jokotefa, and I'll come back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. So here we go. I'm so happy to welcome my guest today, Jokotefa Alaye. Jokotefa is a lifelong student of death and dying. With over 25 years of experience as a death care professional, she felt called to do more than participate in the traditional funeral home model. She's created mourning space to fill the gaps in education and support that society requires for healthy grieving. It is Jokotefa's goal to build a community of empowered grievers that intend to save the world by living well and dying better. She's passionate about sharing information that might encourage all of us to approach the end of life and beyond with less fear and more wonder. She's a licensed funeral professional in the state of California and a NIDA certified end-of-life doula with a focus on grief. You can find her online on Instagram at Mourning Space and at the website mourningspace.com, and that's mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G. So Jokotefa, thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for doing this. Thank you for creating space for us to have these conversations.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Well, I absolutely love it. I get to meet interesting people doing work that I don't necessarily know that much about or haven't done myself. And so there's always so much for me to learn. And I've been really excited to talk to you about your work and just your path and your story. And I'm curious to know what led you initially into the death work that you've been doing for these many years.
Yeah, high school anatomy class. So they had anatomy in my high school, and then they added a second one. So I got to take it junior and senior year. And I really loved the beauty of the human body, let's say. And it was just fascinating, a lot of wonder in the way that we are made. And in doing that, there is an element of, you know, not being squeamish, right? And I learned that about myself at that time, like I'm not a squeamish person. And my parents have always been very practical. So just, you know, you don't need to go to college to find yourself necessarily. You could just get a job or find a trade or, you know, whatever. They wasn't like, go get your 4-year degree and do the thing. So, which, you know, different strokes, whatever you want to do. But that was their kind of message to me. And I considered that. And someone, I don't remember who, brought up the idea of being a mortician. And I was like, well, I could probably do that. I'm not squeamish. I really love anatomy. Like, it's a trade and you go to a trade school. And that sounds like, that sounds a perfect plan. And I lived in the Bay Area in California, and in San Francisco Bay Area. And the college there at the time, it's changed now, was the San Francisco College of Mortuary Science. So I enrolled in that right out of high school. So I went immediately from high school to Mortuary College, and almost immediately after that, got my first apprenticeship at a funeral home. So I've been working in funeral homes and going to Mortuary College since 1997. The plan worked, right? So I've done nothing else ever since, and I'm 44 now. So it's just been also as I'm going through it, wanting to take part in all the things. So funeral director, embalmer, running a crematory, then cemetery management later on, and doing pre-arrangements as well. And so I find value in people knowing a lot about the industry, and so being able to educate people from real time, from real world knowledge and experience. And so it was important to me to keep progressing. And that's kind of what I've done ever since, and never stopped learning, never stopped trying to learn something new or a new facet of the business.
I love that even back that many years ago, at such a young age, you were able to kind of listen to who you really are and apply that to the vocation that you chose. Because I remember thinking something similar when I was considering, should I stay in hospice or should I do family medicine? And I thought, you know what? I can do hospice. I'm comfortable with it. I actually like it. And not everyone can. Not everyone can do these jobs that we do. And I think it's a sensible choice on the one hand to choose what you're able to do, but also what a gift for all the rest of us that you followed your heart and you're doing work that many, many people couldn't do. And I really appreciate that.
I say that often to like dental hygienists and like tax people. I'm like, I can never do your job. So I'm grateful that all of us like have our position. But what's interesting though is I got into it really about the science. That was what drew me to the business. And now that's the thing that I do least, and probably I'm happy that way. I have it's interesting that dealing with deceased people is a very difficult thing to do, and I still have that skill set, but it is also difficult, and a different difficult in dealing with grieving people. And I find that I am more naturally inclined to work on that side and deal with grieving people, which is just a whole other thing to be in process.
Yeah, which from your bio, it sounds like there's been this process of growth and evolution in a way in your own career and how you practice. And so what inspired you to start Morning Space and move in that direction?
Well, there's only so much you can do, I think, when you work in a funeral home. And I mean, let I know I live in the world with the TikTok and the Instagram too. Like, I'm not the only one doing all of this. But there's a certain sort of information that I wanted to relay that maybe, there's various things that people share about working in funeral homes. But what I find is that oftentimes when you're meeting with someone, a family, the information that you have is too late sometimes, and not the right time. And I am passionate about making death and dying and all that entails normal conversation, which it is, right? Just but more common. And that requires a language that we may not all have, and a knowledge base that we definitely don't all have, and we sort of willfully don't want to learn. And so I created Morning Space as an approachable way to share information from my vast knowledge of funeral service, but also just what I've learned from seeing people deep in grief and what has helped them and what has not helped them, kind of things that were very frustrating, things that were very healing. As a way of one, letting people know that whatever, like they're gonna, they're people feel this way all the time, and grief is a normal thing that is happening all around us every day about everything. And so just the more that we expose ourselves to that reality and are accepting, of that piece of life, which is, so prevalent, maybe the better, more well-rounded, healthier overall people we will that will be. So yeah, I created it because I could not say anything anymore. I couldn't not I needed to do something with this drive. I had to share information and to make death and dying better for people. So I didn't know what I was gonna do, but I had to do something. And like in 2020, right? And then just grief amped up. Our lives went crazy, and the world as we knew it was destabilized. And that sounds very it's a very privileged thing for us to say in the US of like our life is fine. Like there's always Amazon, there's always like things are easy for us. And so shame on us for thinking forever things were just gonna be easy and we'd have no devastation to deal with on a large scale, right? I know devastation happens, right? But large scale, we that really shook us, shook our foundation. And I saw the way that we were already bad at grieving death and dying. And now we had this whole other thing where death and dying happened, but also the end of the life as we knew it and the end of thinking that our kids were always going to have one kind of childhood or whatever it was. Just so much came up for us. And I was like, we got like, this is the time. If we're going to talk about grief, we got to talk about it now because we're going to carry so much. This is generational grief that we are going to have on top of everything else. So we need to talk about it now and recognize and give people tools to navigate all the grief they're going to experience and it's going to ripple down to their kids that the last few years have done to us.
It's so interesting because I come from the hospice world and had kind of a similar recognition at some point that hospice, even though we're all about death and dying, hospice oftentimes overlooks grief. And I really feel like sometimes it's completely missing or it's put off to the side a little bit. Like, yes, we acknowledge that families who have someone die in hospice are grieving, but it feels like we don't engage in it deeply enough. And then it sounds like the funeral industry might have the same tendency at times to not be really show up and really be there for people who are grieving. I don't know if that's your experience.
We do our best, right? And it depends on the person. Some people are more adept at navigating emotions than other people, right? But I think good funeral professionals care, and that care shows up in the way they serve the people that they work with. And so people feel are in a position to feel heard. People are in a position to share things that they may not share to everybody else because we're sort of a neutral party. But then there's also this idea of like we're not grief professionals, right? And so there's a kind of a line. And for me, I'm not a grief counselor. I'm not I took a grief support specialist course to try to validate the things I've learned and learn more so I can speak in a way that is educated. But yeah, I think there's only so much that we think is in our wheelhouse, right? And we do our best, but it's not a part of it. Yeah, so I think we do what we can, but the more that we can start educating all of us in death care about that piece, I think the better we will all be to get
Yeah.
that additionally.
And I love the line from your bio that it's your goal to build a community of empowered grievers that intend to save the world by living well and dying better. And I just now heard a quote from Joanne Cacciatore. She's a grief therapist, and she said, the world will be saved by people who have grieved deeply and survived it because we need to know how to deal with loss because that's what life is all about now. And so we need people who have experienced it and know how to get through it, basically.
And it's also this thread of humanity that it's a common ground that we're all going to have. And if we all took a moment to ask ourselves, what a part of this relationship is driven by grief, how are people responding in a way that may be, because they're in a bad space, like it makes us more human. And I think that's what we got to save the world, right? Is to look at each other as humans that we want to respect.
Yeah, exactly. And it brings up for me too, in your line of work, one thing I hear at times now, I hear more and more people saying, I don't want to have a funeral, and telling their families, do not have a funeral for me. I don't want that. I'm more modern than that. Funerals are old fashioned. And from your perspective, I'd love to have you tell us why funerals are important.
Yeah, so that drives me bonkers, but that's also like a self-serving position, right? And so also it's hard for me to say that as a funeral professional necessarily and have it be heard in a way that people will be willing to hear me out, hear me out. So what I'm saying, I'm not telling you you need to sit in a chapel and face the front and sit there quietly and fold your hands and wear all black. That is not a funeral. A funeral is a ritual at the end of a life. That's all it is. And that can be anything that you can envision. It can be anywhere that makes sense for you. It can be with whomever makes sense to be there at the time. But what happens is that people say, I don't want a funeral. And then the family does one of two things. They either don't have a funeral because that's what they wanted, but then their opportunity for the healing that can happen in these rituals is like stunted. Or two, they have the funeral anyway, and then they feel guilt that they didn't do what they wanted, right? And so I just want people to change that phrase, don't have a funeral for me. I'd stop saying that and instead say, do what works for you. I'm not interested in you spending a lot of money. I'm not interested in fancy whatevers. I'm not interested in being in a chapel. I don't need burial or cremate. Like, I don't have a need here. Or I do, right? Say what your needs are or what your needs aren't, but then allow them to do what works for them instead. Like, you guys do what makes you feel like you get what you need, whatever that looks like. I'm not gonna say don't, right? I'm gonna say don't spend a lot of money. Be practical. Like, and don't make yourself miserable over it, right? Don't like have a whole big affair that stresses you out more than it's helpful, right? And I think that's what people mean. That's what people mean. Don't put yourself out for me. I don't want to do that to you. And so there's a way to say that that still allows for people to have this ritual. And here's the thing. I just watch, just look around you, and you see the way that we rely on our community for everything. And we see the way that in the last few years that when we didn't have our communities, it broke us so bad. And we're doing that every day by saying no funerals. That was like chipping away at our communities. And then we keep doing it in other ways, and then we're stuck with no one around us, and we are social animals. Like, we need to be with each other. And the catharsis that happens from just being with people who share a love for somebody in sacred time and attention, that there's power in that, and you know that because we do it. You know it because we're drawn to it, because we sort of have to. And I saw when my friend died in 2020, she couldn't have the funeral we wanted her to have, right? But I saw the way that they people did not let that stop them from doing what they needed to do, which was grieve together as a community that loved her. So instead, they put up a mural on a seawall in Ocean Beach, and they would go gather there. So it's outside. They can spread far apart, but they can be together and have a place to go. Also, that idea of having a memorial of, this is where I go when I want to be in touch with her, and this is where I go when I want to feel the connection to other people that need this as a place to go. And so I just watched it happen where we couldn't do what we wanted to do, but people figured out a way to make it happen because they had to have that experience.
I love that. And I think you're right. When people say they don't want a funeral, they're talking about maybe the stereotypical traditional funeral that they may have experienced in the past and had a bad experience with or didn't care for at all for someone else. And they don't want that, which is fine. Great. Let's move on from that. Let's use our imaginations and do something different or unique. And half the year I live on the ocean. I live in Redondo Beach, California, and I have a couple of times here I've been able to witness paddle out ceremonies where surfers, when someone from their community dies, they all paddle out on their surfboards out of the ocean. And I was just moved to tears when I saw this happen. And they sit on the water in a circle. I'm not sure what, I mean, I'm sure they tell stories and they talk and they throw flowers into the water. And I stood there thinking, that's a funeral. That's the kind of funeral I want to have. I want that. I just want that pure, the pure energy of just coming together and saying goodbye to someone who has died.
Totally. And I think some people say I don't want a funeral, and they mean I want a celebration of life, right? So they want that uplifting feeling that they don't feel the word funeral means. But also I get that, just throw me in the whatever. I want nothing, you know? And I have that conversation so often. I don't know. Just like, but what if you could do, what if there was something? What if it was a walk? What if it was meeting at the beach? What if it was whatever? But I think people are so on guard over that word. And yes, had an experience and that was like, no, I don't need that. Because, I mean, let's be honest, there are bad funerals. There have been, like, people don't know the name. People aren't speaking personally about that person. The congregation's not engaged because they're not that faith necessarily. And so there are funerals that aren't honoring the situation, right? But there's a way to not, a way to have a better experience. And that's what I want for everybody. And I want them to have the experience that works for them. I don't have I don't have skin in the game of what that looks like. I just want you to be open to the idea that there will be something that is meaningful for the people that are left. And it's a gift to them. And it may hurt them if you don't.
And so, do you advise planning ahead for funerals? And I don't know. I mean, I know, isn't it called pre-planning or prepaying for a funeral in the funeral industry? But what do you advise there?
So there's a spectrum of what you can do to pre-arrange, from having recording your own thoughts, right? This is what I think I want. And then you could take that a step further and you could say, this is what I want, but I'm going to tell my family I want it. Or you could go and you could find a place that you can pay for it ahead of time. And there are a lot of, so this is why I think people need to do something. Pre-needs are great because you can take. Do you want to like buy a car? Just buy a car, you know, on a day that is the worst day of your life, where you are foggy, maybe hungover, have not been sleeping, fighting with your family. Is that a day you're going to go out then and decide on the car that you want? And make that big financial decision, make that decision of like, this is the thing that's going to carry my family around. This is a salesperson I want to work with. Like, that's not, you're not going to do that. But we put ourselves in that position with funeral homes because we don't think about it. And then someone is deceased and we must make a decision. And then we scramble and do our best with everybody we have to make a decision with also, right? And so if that person hasn't made their own decision and they got five kids, are we going to get all five kids to agree? You know, family, like you have to have a family, right? So difficult to navigate. But at the very least, you could see what is out there. Maybe find a place or a certain funeral professional that you resonate with that feels good, like they'll take care of you. When you do pre-arrange, a lot of times you can pay in advance. So you lock in the price of that funeral. So if you live another 20 years, like I've done pre-arranges where someone paid like $600 for a casket and a funeral, whole thing. And the
Wow.
family's not paying, they're paying more for like the things that they're adding or like sales tax and stuff like that. But it's not like the bulk of it is covered by that crazy $600 than they did in like 1940 or whatever it is. You know, so there is wisdom in at least thinking about it. Also, talking about family, it allows you to make a decision for yourself, and you know, understanding that maybe there's going to be some discontent. And if you just have it and it's done, it minimizes some of that discontent, because I can't fight over, I can fight less about what this thing is going to look like. Because you're like, no, it's done and it's paid for. So you all didn't even have to worry about like who does what or who has to chip in for whatever or how do we get the money out. Like it's just done. And then also, I think people don't do them because they think they can't change them. And you can. You can typically ask or make a note that says, this is what I think I want, but if my family wants to change it later, let them change it. So there are different ways. There are different ways to do it. But if you're not having those conversations for yourself, if you're not having those conversations with your family, they're going to have it at the worst day.
That's so true. And my personal experience was when my mom died, she had pre-planned and pre-paid for her funeral. She left us a notebook that had all of her wishes in it. Yet, but the funeral home had all of it. We went there to visit with them, and they knew everything. They said, "We already have the video. She already gave us photos, and we made the video 5 years ago, and it's been sitting here waiting." And they walked us through everything, and I realized what a great gift it was because my brother and I are very different people who don't see eye to eye on a lot of things. And honestly, neither one of us would have planned the funeral my mom planned for herself. Neither one of us would have thought of it or done it that way. And I'm sure we would have disagreed with each other and it would have been a challenge. So it was a huge gift and a blessing that she did that for us.
Yeah, so I'm glad you're saying it because it's hard for me to say if you do this, it's a gift. Because it's like, are you know, sure that you're selling, you know? But no, but for real, I believe it. For real, I believe it. It is a gift, and I just see the way it impacts people to have it, and the difference in experience that you can have when it's
Yeah.
taken.
So what if you wanted something really different, like something on the beach that I might choose? How do you do that? Can you enlist a funeral professional to help with that or to help make that arrangement in
Yeah,
advance? Or
funeral professionals, if they're not now, they better get progressive. And yes, and that's who you want to find. You want to find someone who's like, you want a service at the beach? I'm going to help you have a service at the beach. Now, they might not have a line item on a price list that says beach service, you know, but they'll have, you know, whether the service is at a place you go to, like a church or to the beach, like, what's the difference? You know, go here or here.
yeah, so it's worth asking and be as creative as you want to be, but then enlist the people to help so that, yeah, because if I left for my children, have a service at the beach for me, that might feel overwhelming if they don't even know where to start or how to begin. But having someone who could assist with that, I think could make a big difference.
Well, there's also now this sort of new, not new, but you can find celebrants, and I'm one as well, but you can find a place that has a celebrant and talk to that celebrant about having those, because those are going to be those are people who are officiate funerals basically, but those are going to be the people that you talk to about like I want help officiating, I want help planning this kind of a funeral, and a celebrant would be a great option for something like that.
That's good to know. And are there limitations of what you can do? Like if someone wants, say, a Viking funeral where your body goes out on a ship that burns. I
Sure.
mean,
Yeah.
how do you learn about what the limitations are? And
Yeah, that's no fun. All of the states are going to have different and countries, honestly. And I can mostly speak to California because that's where I've always been. But definitely, there are things that people want to do that are illegal, and I am going to tell you that. I mean, that's I'm gonna have to. Like, that's my job, is to inform you of what's legal and what's not legal. It's also my job to say, well, that's not legal, so we're not gonna do that. But, you know, what's a way that we can get that sentiment across in doing a way that's not breaking any laws? Viking funerals, you know, probably aren't gonna be on that list.
Yeah, probably
You know.
not advisable.
I've heard of way people like trying to do something similar that was legal. And so again, you just kind of figure out how do we send them off to sea in a way that feels that way, but maybe it's cremated remains instead of a full body.
Yeah. So that makes sense, especially for people who have an idea in mind of what they would like their send-off to be like. It's really worth it to put some time into thinking it through, putting it on paper at the very least, and then maybe even enlisting some professional help from people who could assist the family to make that be a reality.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the other thing too is that there are more options now than there have ever been. So composting is now legal in many states. Alkaline hydrolysis, which would be a water cremation, is legal in many states. And so it's not just, am I going to be buried or am I going to be cremated? That's like that there are other options of, you know, if I am going to be buried, where am I going to be buried? And if I'm going to be cremated, then what happens to my ashes? And then do I want, is composting something that feels important to me? And so do I live in a state that has that available? And if so, you know, where do I gotta be to get it? And alkaline hydrolysis too. So these are not quite as easily accessible because they are they're new, and the regulation around them is new. And so creating these new, the infrastructure to have them is time consuming. But yeah, so you gotta think of now, like, what are my new options? Like, what's out there?
I love that idea. And I for, coming from the hospice world, I know sometimes what I've witnessed is that a patient dies at home, the nurse may be there to pronounce the patient dead, and then the nurse leaves and isn't always there for what comes after. And I think that sometimes we don't necessarily have a lot of experience or training with knowing how do we prepare the family for what's going to happen next. I remember when my mom died, the hospice nurse called the funeral home and then she left and took off and wasn't there when the funeral home arrived. But it seems to me like it's really important that there be a more seamless transition there and that hospice people should understand what happens when the funeral home is called.
Well, I think, and then a conversation to have ahead of, before the death has occurred, right? Is, you know, when this happens, is it important that the funeral home get called right away? Or do you want some time? You know, do you want time the family to come? Do you want to be able to call people and have them come to the house first? Because that's okay. You know, you don't, there isn't like, pick up the phone, like, take a minute, you know, at least. Or, you know, if it's not, know who you're going to call immediately, right? So figure out what is most important to you, you know, time or expediency, right? And then make sure that the hospice nurse then is aware it can then facilitate those phone calls, because that is, funeral homes will ask a lot of questions about, you know, what the situation is in the home, you know, hallway, stairs, you know, and any of that stuff. And the family's not going to be in a great place to answer those questions, and it's going to feel tedious and not important. I don't care about stupid questions. Like, just come out here. So the hospice nurse is a great resource to make that phone call and answer those questions. And then, you know, let the family know, you know, I'm going to call them. They're going to ask these questions. I'm going to handle it for you. And I'm going to stay here if you can, until they come. And, you know, knowing that 20 funeral homes are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, someone may not be at the facility, but people are will respond, you know. And I guess there's also the reality of sometimes response times take longer than other times, depending on where they are, you know, and if someone else passed an hour the other direction and then they got to go back. So, you know, just letting people know of the reality of funeral homes are going to do the best they can to be there in a timely fashion, but you know, it depends.
And so the funeral home's job at that point is to transport the body out of the home, which it seems to me like there could be situations where that can be challenging depending on the home itself and how things are situated. And so I'm just wondering, does that tend to be a time that could be traumatic for a family? Do they need to be prepared? Like if they live like three flights up in a walk up with no elevator, I mean, they need to be kind of prepared in advance for this is going to be a process. This is going to be a challenge.
Well, it's just the rea what is the reality of what has to happen in this moment? So obviously we're gonna love one story hospice bed in the living room, because that makes things very simple, just a little more elegance because there's not awkward corners or stairs or whatever it is. So absolutely of that, they're gonna be, as respectful and careful as possible. But like the gurneys are metal and loud, and they have a like a ratchet thing that the wheels fall down and chunks, like the sights and sounds are incongruous with kind of the sacred space of a person dying. Right. Now we funeral people should come in and be, polite and quiet and respectful and kind of in and out as much as they can, although, answer questions if they can too. But yes, it is jar. It's a jarring, and then also, what now do we do with this empty bed that we have to look at? Right. And so there's different schools of thought with funeral homes. So some will make the bed, some will strip the bed, some will lay a flower. There are different trainings that people do, to what they think, might be most he like less least jarring to a family. And so typically, I guess for me, my normal response would be to make the bed back up, and I might have a flower and I place it there. But I always laugh about that because we did the flowers a lot, and then I read a Joan Didion book. I don't know if you've read it, but The Year of Magical Thinking, and
Oh,
she
yeah.
talks about flower and like hating it and how she was like on the whatever on alert for fake flowers. It's like, well, can't want them all, and so that would be something like if you knew that funeral home was someone who did that, you might ask the family ahead of time, I know this funeral home sometimes leaves flowers. Does that feel okay to you? So getting to know your funeral homes and what, how they handle that situation, and then you can better prepare the family for they strip the bed. They're gonna, or do you want them to strip the bed? And you can tell them, like, hey, can you make this bed back up? Instead of like they go to strip it. Oh, please. I already told them, I told you we're just gonna neaten it up. So if you just do that.
That's really good to know. I never realized that the funeral home, might take a step like that. But I do remember this devastating feeling of emptiness after they removed my mom, after being there with her and taking care of her. And her bedroom was just a place I couldn't go for several days because it was I never felt such a loss as when I stepped in that room again and she wasn't there. And so that's really powerful to think that the funeral home might be able to do something that would make a difference, that would help with that.
Well, and I think we're gonna do our best too, but also, for the hospice workers out there, or the people who are out there supporting, that's something to say is like when this bed is empty, what can we do to make it as least jarring, as peaceful a thing that it can be still like still sitting in your living room too, right? So if it's a hospice bed, like sometimes you're waiting for a while. So what can we do? Can we put flowers on it? Can we put a little teddy bear on there? Like strip it and put it off to the side. Like, what can we do with this bed to make it feel as good as possible?
And I really like that idea of having the hospice staff kind of prepare the family that you will feel something about this. You will feel it, and we can do something, whatever you might like or whatever your loved one might have liked, that would make this a little bit easier and that would help you a little bit afterwards.
And just acknowledge the fact that there's a this hole in your life and in your house.
And
That's just it. Like, yeah.
it's a big sudden change that you kind of don't even realize is coming until it happens. So tell us a little bit more about what you offer through Morning Space. I know you've written a journal for grievers, is that right?
I took that grief support specialist class, and as a yeah, there's like a final project you had to do, and I thought it would probably be something like funeral home related since that's what I do. But it ended up I had this therapy appointment, and we talk about like we're talking about food, and I've had like dieting like up and down all my life, and it's really stressful and this is not uncommon. Like this is a reality for many people, and that when you do finally make a change forever, that you will lose something, right? You will lose in the, and so in my experience, you're gonna lose like binge eating. You're gonna lose the emotional hit that you get when you're stressed out and you open the fridge, right? That's, you get a feeling, which is why you do it. And a part of letting, making changes, maybe, and something that we don't even think about, maybe acknowledging the loss of something that's not great for you that you're trying to get rid of. So whether that's cigarettes or alcohol or bad relationships, whatever it is that you're like, that season of my life I need to close because it's not good for me. But I, that's not fair for me to just like cold turkey and pretend I never got anything from that, because that's not real. I did. I these are the things. So it basically, it's called Fire Under the Night Sky, A Guide to Letting Go. And it's a funeral for a part of yourself. And you, I walk you through in the workbook identifying what it is. So I might say, I need to get rid of like food, but it's not food, it's my behaviors around food. And then what were the good things? Like where do I remember, like what's my life story of this person or this behavior? Well, I remember just one day like doing this thing and making this action and it felt good, and then I kept doing it. And then over the course of my life, here are other ways that food has made me feel good. And I'm going to acknowledge that. But then also, why do I want to change? What are the things that are so important that I'm willing to let this go? Let these, this reliance on this bad habit or this tool, how do I let that go? And what's big enough for me to change? And then what resources do I have to feel that way in other ways? Because you are not limited to feeling those things in just this way. Like there are other ways. So make yourself a list of like, what resources do I have? So like for me, instead of desserts, like having tea, like to me, like having a ritual, like of making tea at the end of the day, like that is a substitute, right? And then, so I walk you through the whole thing, you make notes. And at the end, I wrote out a funeral, and you can use that one or you don't have to, but then you plug in all the information that you had written down for yourself. And then you can just read it verbatim, like with what I wrote plus your additions, and have a funeral for that thing, that part of yourself you're ready to let go. And then at the end, I make you write yourself a thank you card, because that's what people do at the end of a funeral, right? They show up for you, and so you say thank you, and so you're showing up for you. You should thank yourself for doing that work. And so it's just something that you can do for many things. It's something that you can revisit, when you are like, you forget maybe the things that you were doing, like you forget your whys, and so you slip back into those habits, and you just remember, no, I had to say goodbye to that. So we'll resume.
I like that idea because spiritual teachers say that the way to spiritual growth is actually to go through all the little deaths that we experience before our own death actually happens, and to learn how to let go of things and how to say goodbye. So I like that idea of having funerals for the parts of you that you need to let go of, but that may be challenging.
Well, and it's one of those ways that I'm, also saying through Morning Space is like, we think of death and dying as of a person, but there's death of lots of things. There's the dying of seasons, there's the dying of relationships, there's that, like beginning, middle, end, like there's a flow. And so I want people to honor all of it and feel safe and that it's acceptable. It's like a social, not socially unacceptable for to grieve things that are ending, that may are even bad, like whatever it is. Like we can't, just shoving it down does not work.
Yeah. So So true. And I think if we did a better job of acknowledging all the little deaths and just facing them and experiencing them as manifestations of death, in a sense, we would be so much better off in terms of our grief and our own aging and other losses that we face as we go along.
Yep, that's what I'm trying to do. Exactly.
So, what else in your work through Morning Space, what else do you offer to people and what can they find on your website?
In this moment, it's mostly just the things that I want to share. It is blog posts occasionally. My goal is to create a Patreon, but the reality of the situation is, this is my passion project. This is what I do in my free time, and my free time is sometimes very minimal, and sometimes, sometimes bigger, sometimes smaller. But this is a season of very small windows of free time. So it'll come. I just need to. It'll be. When I can do it, and I have to grieve that, I have to grieve the fact that I have big ideas and they're gonna take shape when they do and not when I want them to, which was yesterday.
Exactly. So true. As we talked about before we started recording, I'm always a person, I've always had big ideas, and so many of them couldn't just weren't possible. Couldn't always do them all at once or when I wanted to or wish they would happen. But as you said, that's something to grieve and let go of and wait for another day.
And just as long as I'm doing my as long as I'm doing my best with the time that I have, and not if it's just every once in a while I post on Instagram, like that's what I can do. And I love these conversations, so I love being I love speaking to people about it. So I take any opportunity to meet with people and share my information. And so, podcasts, whether it's podcasts or doing workshops or whatever it is, I love talking.
Well, another thing I forgot I wanted to ask you was, do you have suggestions for people for talking to their loved ones about their preferences for after death, especially if they have a family who might be resistant and don't really want to hear it or talk to them? Do you have any tips for that?
Yeah, so few things. Number one, well, I'm gonna give a shout out to my death deck friends, and I know that you're their friends also. I love that as an approachable way to have conversations. I think it's such a great tool to just sit and have. If you can't just like write it out, if you gotta make it like light and fun, bust out that deck and use it. And I think the more we can do that as a society, communicate, the more we can have those conversations, which that helps facilitate. It gets people practiced about talking about it, right? One of the we've got I feel like parents and kids are generally the ones we want to talk to we talk to about these things, and sometimes spouse also. But I see sometimes kids, like parents, will come and say, "I want this," and kids will go, "La la la la, my parents were not gonna die." And whatever we need to do to get to a place where we're willing to listen to that, because they are. And that doesn't mean that they're gonna die tomorrow because they want to talk about it. But you need, like, you're gonna want to hear what they're saying, because if you don't hear it, you will be. I want to project people in the future of like, this is what it looks like for you to not have that conversation. And this is what it looks like to have that conversation. So it's uncomfortable in the moment, and honor that, like, be realistic. Like, this is going to be hard, but we do hard things around here, and we have these conversations because it's not as hard. It's the least hard. That one's harder, right? So that's the conversation. But then also as parents, having that conversation with our kids and not pretending like that's never going to happen. Because I see both. I see kids pretending that it's not going to happen, and then I see parents pretending that it's not going to happen. And just if we can just get back to the idea of hard versus harder, that's the best. It's the best reason I can give you to have it be worth having those conversations. I also think you start early, certainly my kid is not My kid will talk to you about anything around death and dying because he grew up, running around funeral homes, like just be like visiting me at work, right? That's never been a thing for him. And we have overall an issue sheltering our kids from death and dying. So the more we can just take any opportunity to have those conversations safely, so whether it's pets or grandparents or neighbors or whatever it is, not hiding that from kids, but instead allowing them to hear what's happening and ask questions and participate to the level of which they want to participate. That will then make healthy adults that can have these conversations easier. So if we're talking long term, talk to your kids, like your little kids.
Yes, such a good point. And a good thing for everyone out there to remember. And I think we just have to overcome our fears and just try it. And I love your recommendation of the death deck. It's great for families sitting around the table because you can play it as a fun conversational game without thinking about it too much as going into deep topics, but it does lead you there eventually into deeper things, and people find themselves suddenly having discussions that they never expected to, but it's really important.
Well, and then, yeah, so anything that's going to take the sting out a little bit. So, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Then, okay, one other thing I wanted to ask you. Most of what I know about the funeral industry came from watching 6 Feet Under years ago, which I don't even know if any of that's accurate. But one thing that broke my heart in that show is that they showed a whole room full of cremains, I guess they're called, like containers of people's ashes that had never been picked up or claimed. And somehow I just found that so sad. And does that actually happen? Do you, after cremation, are there people whose remains never get claimed by their families?
So I will say first, I didn't watch it because I didn't want to critique it from an insider perspective, right? I knew I would get
Yeah.
irritated.
Get irritated. Yeah. Just like I feel with medical shows, I know about that feeling.
So I didn't want it. But to your question, yes. So sometimes there's just no one to come, right? So there's no family. Sometimes it's very difficult and people can't do it. It's sort of a version of ghosting. Like, it's too hard to have this conversation. It's too hard to engage in this thing, and so I just cannot do it, and I just won't, but I would say I don't have like rooms full. It's like occasionally. It's not pervasive.
Okay.
I would also say, more than that, what would happen maybe? So there's a thing where people want to take ashes home. So there's words, right? Ashes seems to be what people are most comfortable with. So we use that. Cremated remains is something that funeral people were using for a long time because they felt it was most accurate. Cremains is a way to shorten cremated remains, and so whatever word works best for you. But people cremate. And they take the urns home, and then nothing else happens. And then that person dies, and then someone's like, "What do I do with this?" Like,
Yeah.
and then other people die, and then people they give it to the light, like, "Oh, you're the one in the family that takes the urn, so here you go." And then at some point, someone's got like a closet with all the grandparents in it, and they're like, "What, what do we do?" And there's, real life examples of people finding cremated remains in storage units or closets of houses that they buy, or whatever it is. And so I, separate maybe from your question, I always recommend that people, if your preference is taking the urn home, that's fine. Like, do what you need to do, take that time. But know that that's not the end. That's not the final resting place. So figure out also where that is. So if not you, somebody knows what to do with it.
So that would be a good thing to put in your disposition plan. If you're making a plan, make sure you tell people if you want to be cremated, what would you like to have happen with your remains? And hopefully there's a final resting place and not being left behind in a storage unit or passed on to various relatives.
Yeah, so you just have to say that home is not that home is a stop to the final. So what that's okay if that if you want to make a stop, but what's the end also? Figure that out. Figure out both. And then as my little legal plug, there are only things there are certain legal things and certain not legal things. So do the legal things.
With the scattering.
With the scattering, yeah.
Yes, I think that's really important for people to know about, because I think we might all have visions of, you know, being scattered from a mountaintop and being scattered over the ocean from a boat. And I don't know, are those things legal?
Different states are going to have different rules. And so in California, ridiculous, but in other states, very, you may not have any of the restrictions like we have, or the permitting that we have in California also. And so check out your state, talk to your funeral home in your state will know what you can do and what you can't do.
Okay. Oh, so that's really good to know. Good. If you're making a plan ahead for your disposition, that you look into that. So make sure what you ask for is actually possible and legal wherever
and
you live.
And then don't yell at the funeral home when they tell you that. Like, we just don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah. The yeah. Funeral home didn't make the laws. You just have to enforce them.
Yeah.
So that's really good to know. Wow. You've answered so many of my questions that have just been in the back of my mind for a long time. But yay. I'm wondering, because your focus now is on helping people with grief, and I don't know if we covered everything, if there's anything else you wanted to say or a last message for people listening about dealing with grief.
There are so many good examples of people who have taken their grief and done something beautiful with it. But in the time, you know, shortly after or however long, and maybe even moments now, you know, no one knew that was going to be maybe the end result. And so I'm thinking of these, like, I'm thinking of works of art. I'm thinking of music in particular. I'm thinking of the two books that I love, which is The Year of Magical Thinking, the Joan Didion book, and Nick Cave's book about losing his son, Faith, Hope, and Carnage. And in those books, they talk about the reality of just the complete, like, wipeout, crawling on the ground, like, scrape to get by reality of grief. But at the end of it, or, you know, they give us this gift of knowing what it looks like to come out on the other side of that experience. And not that it ever, the loss is not there, not that the sadness isn't there, grief's not there, but they give these gifts to the world because of it, right? And their people live on through them becoming different people and sharing their experience through other people. In particular, I'm just totally going to shout out Nick Cave. Like, he, to watch him change from what he kind of was as a 80s rock singer to this angel that he has become for grief and saving, doing his own part to save the world, that happened because he went through all of that loss. So grief is hard and it's ugly and messy and we don't want it. I mean, we'd rather not. And it will feel terrible, but it may not always feel so terrible. And there may be something beautiful and great, and you may change the world, and it may be so many beautiful things might happen because of it. And so I just want people to have that kind of hope, right? It's not all despair and devastation. There's beauty, you know.
I love that. I had someone message me and say, why do you talk about such dark things as death and grief? Why don't you spread light instead? And I wanted to say, oh my goodness, going through the darkness, that's how we get to the light. That's how we actually discover the light, is having gone through these dark times and surviving it.
Well, and we're bringing light to these things. That's exactly what we're doing. We're not in the dark place, we're bringing light to the dark place.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the goal. And I see that's what you're doing in your work and what I'm trying to do, because we want those empowered grievers who will be out there and bring their broken hearts and help change this world.
Absolutely. That's it. That's it.
Yeah. Oh, that's beautiful. Well, I'll remind listeners to check out your Instagram posts at Morning Space and your website, morningspace.com. And Joko Tifa, I want to just thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I love it. I love talking. I love bringing light to this subject. So
Yeah,
thank you for what you're
it's
doing.
been really fun to talk with you.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Joko Tifa and found it useful. I really enjoyed talking with her about our commonalities and how both of our professions, in spite of dealing with death and dying all the time, the funeral industry and the medical profession, could use a little extra training around dealing with grief and helping family members and loved ones with their grief early on, anticipatory grief and grief throughout the process of what they're experiencing. And so things are coming to light here in this end-of-life arena. We're recognizing where there's been inadequate training in the past and beginning to see things we need to improve and places where change is needed. And I really enjoy having those conversations because it's looking forward and looking ahead. What do we need to add to what we're already doing? And that feels very positive to me and aspirational in a way. We're thinking of ideas of how to make things better in the future. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation as well. And remember, if you like content like this, to please tell other people about it. Share the podcast with those who might also benefit from listening in. And make sure you subscribe and leave a rating and review wherever you happen to listen. That's very helpful. If you're interested in making a small contribution to help keep the podcast and the YouTube channel on the air, you can go to eoluniversity.com/support. You can also buy my books or my courses, and you'll find out about all of those at eoluniversity.com. So, thanks for joining me today, and I'll be back next week with another new interview with Rosie Grant from Ghostly Archive, talking about gravestone recipes and really a fun conversation. So, join me next week and don't miss that. Until then, remember, we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious existence. Bye-bye.